Continuous reading of the gospel lesson, as often happens each of the 3 years of the lectionary readings, that gospel, Matthew, Mark, or Luke, during the summertime, we more or less follow a continuous reading, which is the beauty in my mind of the lectionary. It helps us to see that particular gospel. You may ask what's happened to John, and John actually gets fair play during the season of Easter, which happens in April and May typically. So John is interspersed in a variety of places, but this is the time when we really get to see what is called the Synoptic Gospels, because the word synopsis means that they are related, and all three Gospels are related. And so this Sunday this year is the Gospel of Matthew, and we will be reading from last week's lesson to the end of chapter 10, verses 40 and 40 through 42, a very short lesson, a very important lesson, and I confess it's one I've never preached from. It really kind of struck me by surprise after all these years. You think you preached from everything, but you find these new passages that are really wonderful, and here is one of them. Matthew chapter 10, verses 40 through 42. Whoever welcomes you welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes the one who sent me. Whoever welcomes a prophet in the name of a prophet will receive the prophet's reward, and whoever welcomes a righteous person in the name of a righteous person will receive the reward of the righteous person, and whoever gives even a cup of cold water to one of these little ones in the name of a disciple, truly I tell you, none of these will lose their reward. This is the word of the Lord. I am sure that during the year of an Olympics, when you're watching the track events, many of you have seen the relays. Sometimes we don't watch them because we favor the individual events, but actually the relays are, in my mind, some of the most fascinating. They're the most team events in all of track. And in the Olympic Games, they're especially good because you get the top athletes in the world doing the relays. And if you've ever looked at them, you know that the exchange, the passing of the baton, is critical. Absolutely critical. Something that they do not leave for last-minute preparation. They work on it time and again. Now, the way it goes is this. There is an exchange zone, And many things can happen in that exchange zone. The runner can run too fast and go beyond the exchange zone and disqualify the team. The runner can go too slow and they can collide with the previous runner. Or, and I know you've all seen this, the one or the other can fumble or drop the baton. Now, the way this works is this. The zone is a certain number of yards or meters in which the second, third, or fourth runner will go from zero to almost full speed. It's a tricky thing, though, because all of that stuff has got to happen within that zone. And if it's the 100-yard, which some of you I know have seen, the fastest sprint in the entire world, in the Olympic Games, happens in the 100-meter relay. That's 4 by 100. And the speed of that, the exchange, will often determine who wins it. Now, in the 200, very similar. It's a little bit longer. But in the 4 by 400, which is a relay that I ran a fair amount, the 400 is one of the most difficult of all races because it is supposed to be a sprint, and yet no one can sprint that far. So by the time you get to the end, you are fatigued to the extreme, your legs are gone, and it's an adventure simply to pass the baton. Now, if you see great athletes do it, they just do it with grace. But even there, you've seen people drop the baton, haven't you? Or fall on their face. Well, go to a high school track meet. Now, I know what I'm talking about here. Go to a high school track meet when they aren't the greatest athletes in the world and watch the relay events. I can tell you I ran high school track, and I have done all of the above, including dropping the baton. It's a humiliating thing. It's one thing to lose an individual event. It's another thing to lose it for the whole team. It really is. Now, all of that applies exactly to the Christian faith and to the church, because we are all passing on the faith, you know. We pass on the baton. That's what we do. We're passing on, and we're either receiving it or we're passing it on. And that's the act of discipleship. That's who we are as Christian people. We're either receiving the faith or we're passing it on. And all of the pitfalls in a relay race happen in the life of the church, every single one of them. Many people will run beyond the exchange zone. They'll run way, way out ahead of us and not really wait for anybody else. We see this happening in a variety of ways in the life of the church. In some ways, the academic world has done this, the academic world of religion. I hate to say that about it because I'm very close to the academic world of religion. But I go to the American Academy of Religion meeting almost every year. Society of Biblical Literature meeting happens with it. And that is the most rarefied, airy place to ever go to actually connect with the faith. You'd be surprised. The world of academia tends to be very, very rarefied. And they leave the church behind too often. Now, you need to be thankful here at New York Avenue Church, because we've got folk in this church, and we've invited folk to this church, that don't do that. But too often, that's where the academic world is. They just leave us behind. But they're not the only ones who leave us behind. It is the prophets too often that do that kind of thing, the justice seekers. The justice seekers often in the church will run so far out ahead of the rest of the church that they don't connect. They don't really connect with those who might disagree, don't even know who might disagree. Much of the polarization in the church today happens because of this, and I'm very saddened about that. I really am. I'm not saddened that we're prophetic. I'm not saddened that we're justice-seeking. What saddens me is we don't have conversations with people who disagree. And so we leave them behind. People that could be brought along. People that could be actually be part of the community in which we live. And so in essence, what happens is we lose a good bit of our diversity when that happens. Now, there's another thing that happens that is analogous to the relay race. And that is that we often will run too slow and we'll collide with each other. We'll collide with each other. That's happened in relay races, not very often, but it does. One will kind of run right into the other, into the other's legs, and will fall down because of that. Now, why do we collide? Well, I want to suggest one reason that we collide, and it's a variation on the theme above that I mentioned about outrunning people. We often collide, even if we're in conversation with people, because we don't listen. Amen. Thank you. We don't listen. We just don't listen. I read an interesting book on the theology of community organizing by a British theologian, Chris Shanahan, who talks about the importance of listening. It's an art that we hardly ever exercise, especially in the life of the church. Just sheer listening. He takes a page from the Lord's Prayer. Hallowed be thy name. Hallowed be thy name. If we really hallow God, then we listen to God. And if we hallow that which God listens to, and if we hallow that which God hallows, which is every one of us, then we listen. We take the time to listen. It's simply a matter of respect that we do that. It's a critical thing in the life of the church that we put aside our preconceptions and actually listen. Now, the importance of it can be compared to what we normally do when we're in conversation with people. Now, let's be honest. Let's be honest. Confession is good for the soul. What do you normally do when you're in a conversation with somebody else? What I do, typically, I'm going to confess to you, is I'm sitting there formulating my response, and I'm only half listening. or I'm thinking about whatever else I may need to do in the next moment. That's typically the kinds of things that happen. Now, it may get a lot more complex than that, and you may have a lot of other things that you do when you're in a conversation with another person, but a mentor of mine said something very, 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 very important about the power of listening. And he said this: you know that you've really listened to another person if you can articulate what that other person says to the point that they agree that that is, in fact, what they said. How rare is that? How rare is that? That you actually listen enough that you can repeat it. It's a simple enough thing to do in a conversation with another person, you know. It's a simple enough thing to do. You just simply say, well, this is what I heard. And they don't even need to necessarily say anything. They could nod their head or whatever, but it's the beginning of real, serious conversation. So we collide when we don't listen. When we don't listen. Now, the last feature of the relay race, that is the great pitfall of passing on the baton and passing on the faith, is that we drop the baton. We just simply drop the baton. Now, how might we drop the baton? Well, you may have some ideas on that as Christians, as people that have been practitioners of the faith for lo these many years, but I've got one that I'm pretty sure of, and that is we drop the baton because we don't or rarely share our faith. Rarely, if ever. It's one of the things that the mainline church, it seems to me, one of the things that we are the worst at. It's called evangelism. And most mainline Christians are allergic to the word. Let's be honest. It wasn't easy for us when we renamed the committee that actually brings in new members of the church, the evangelism committee. People started to get all nervous about this, that we were going to become evangelical or something like that. I grew up evangelical, you know. In the northern far reaches of the Southern Baptist Church at that time, northern Missouri, there weren't many Southern Baptist churches beyond us. And, you know, I've told you many times before, it was a very formal Southern, it was the first Baptist church, so it was the first Southern Baptist church in the area. And it was in a Catholic-founded town where there were more Episcopalians and more Methodists than there were Baptists, a strange thing for Southern Baptists. And, you know, I think we really wanted to be Presbyterian, and we really seriously wanted to be Episcopalian, but we were Baptist. But we were not uncomfortable with sharing the faith. We were not uncomfortable doing what typically evangelicals do until we got around some of them, until we had revival preachers come to our church and then made us guilty for not sharing the faith. Because for them, sharing the faith is what it meant to be Christian. But what for them it meant to be Christian was dictating a response. Dictating a response to save that person. And that's what I think we were very uncomfortable about, was that we were the ones responsible for saving other individuals. That it was all up to us to save other individuals. In large manner, that's why I became Presbyterian. I was just really uncomfortable with that kind of stuff. But now, some 36 years later, the opposite has become the case. I mean, we don't share our faith. We're just very uncomfortable about it. There was a wonderful workshop, a conference, that National Capital Presbytery put on about 5-6 years ago. Martha Reese, UCC, United Church of Christ minister, put on this workshop. She goes around the country doing these things about how to share your faith. How to share your faith. It's called evangelism. Didn't use the word evangelism very much. Katie and you all can come on in. Come on, yeah. They didn't share their, they told us it was a conference about how to share your faith story with others. How to share your faith story. Come on, it's okay. I'm ready for you. You can sit on this side too if you want. How to share your faith story with others. And what we learned there is the power of sharing faith stories. You know, it's really what happens. We've been talking about using community organizing tools in this church, like the relational meeting, the one-on-one meeting where we learn one another's animating stories. Really, those are faith stories. It's the best evangelism tool that I know is to actually share your faith. Because, you know, you don't respect yourself if you don't share your story. And you surely don't respect the other person as a person of value if you don't want to pass on something that is most valuable to you if we don't share our faith. So how do we drop the ball? How do we drop the baton? It's by failing to share, just telling your story. You don't have to dictate the response. That's up to God. Just share it. And all that brings me to the gospel lesson this morning, which is receiving the other. Receiving a disciple, receiving a prophet, receiving a righteous one. Now, another translation for that can be a justice seeker. Righteous and justice seeking can be both translation from that Greek word. Receiving the other. The text is about hospitality. It's about the receiving and the giving of faith. It's about the relay race. It's about passing on the faith one to the other. And the key to that whole thing is hospitality. Hospitality. How we receive one another. How we receive people from the outside world. How we do that. All the pitfalls of relay racing are there in hospitality. Our faith can become so esoteric and so privatized that we don't tell it to anybody. Or we don't listen. Or we don't talk. All of those things happen. They're endemic to the life of the church. They become so much of the habits of the church that we need to be shaken up occasionally. We need the foundations shaken. And that's why interim ministry is so important. That's why we have interims that come in. They come in to shake us up. Did you know that? Maybe it's a little too late to tell you all this, but but that's what's happened over the past 2 years. As Katie has come on board to be the interim associate minister, and she's done things differently, and that's a good thing. It makes us think about things. It makes us think about how we pass the faith, how we go about hospitality. It makes us think about virtually everything that we do, whether our faith has become too esoteric, too privatized, whether we share it, how we share it, what we do with it, and how we go about becoming the kind of people that we are. It shakes us up and it gets us ready to pass the baton on to somebody else, Alice, who will be starting next Tuesday. And Katie's done a wonderful job at that. Through all the variety of things that she's done with the children, right? And I take it, you'll agree. Are you with me here? Yeah. With the young adults, with the youth group, the confirmation class, Katie has, in the words of the psalm, received others as God has received us. Katie has offered a cup of cold water. With the community club, the variety of things in so many innumerable ways. She has shaken us up or gently suggested that there is another way to go about things. I'll be honest with you, I didn't think anybody could break me out of the pattern of communion that I've been doing for almost 20 years, but Katie's done it. I may not go back to it. Little things like that, just thinking through little things like inviting the children forward in the name of Christ. I thought to myself, first time she did it, I said, my goodness, wow, in the name of Christ, you mean Jesus is involved in this? Well, I guess so. And the confirmation class and the beauty of the way they did their sermons and conducted worship for us, the Youth Sunday, in so many varieties of ways, her manner, I'm very thankful that she became head of staff, although I think she was glad to give it up after my sabbatical, and I thank you for my sabbatical. I thank you for the way that you've interacted with the staff of the church. Their work is hard because, frankly, sometimes you can be hard on all the staff. But Katie's done that in a beautiful way, and now she's going to be going off to Montreat to do it for others. and for that I'm grateful. There's one last thing I think I want to give to Katie. I've already told her a lot of the stuff. We had a good lunch on Thursday, and we've talked over the last several months about this, that, and the other, about the things that we need to attend to in the church, and we will attend as we make a transition, as we pass the baton off to the next associate minister, again, who will be starting on Tuesday, the varieties of things. There's one last detail that I need to attend to, and it's a critical detail, and it's about the candy. Katie is the keeper of the candy, and Tara was the keeper of the candy before her. That will be passed on to Alice. It's an issue because during the week, people kind of sneak in and take the candy. One Sunday, she actually left the candy out in the inner office, and when she came to work the next week, it was almost all gone, right? Yeah. I don't think I had everything to do with that, but I had something to do with it. Truth is, if I take candy home, I'm going to eat it all, right? So I leave it here, you know? So that's the issue with candy. So the last thing I want to do is give the candy back. Now, there's a tradition here that I think I want to acknowledge, because it's a fine liturgical tradition about candy. It's not just something that happens during worship play, and all of you get a piece of candy during worship play, right? It's not just something that happens during worship play. Did you know that at the end of a bar or bat mitzvah, they will throw candy at the person? Did you know that? Have you ever seen this? My wife and I were at the Western Wall in Jerusalem, one of the most sacred places in Judaism. And we were there the day that they had bar and bat mitzvahs was going on. And you could see, there must have been about 20 of them going on. And you could see all these bat or bar mitzvahs that were ending, and they were throwing candy at the person. It was a wonderful thing. The gist of it is this: the sweetness of Torah. So the sweetness of the gospel. So giving candy back, I'm going to have to throw this, because that's what you do when you end a journey of faith. The sweetness of the gospel that Katie has given to us. So, can you mind catching? Huh? There you go. Here we go. There you go. There we go. Now, pick all that up, by the way. Let's catch it. There we go. Here we go. There we go. Katie? Okay. Okay. Katie? There we go. Do you want some? Now, we're not supposed to have that in the sanctuary, so you pick all that up. And you eat it. Because it is about the sweetness of the gospel that Katie has given to us. And I'll save all of this to replenish the basket. Amen.